This is Anthony Iannarino, and you're listening to In the Arena.
Step into the arena.
I don't know Linda Richardson well, but she's been a great mentor to me. She was one of the first people to teach consultative selling, and she built an enormous training company by practicing what she taught. She literally helped build generations of salespeople. I asked Linda to step into the arena with us to talk about what might be her most important book, Changing the Sales Conversation. If you want to understand how to use insight selling, if you want to learn how to teach, and if you want to learn how to change the sales conversation, this is where you're going to learn it. Here's my friend Linda Richardson in the arena. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Anthony.
It's great to see you. I can't see you. No one else can. It's a podcast, but I wanted to do video so you and I could look at each other.
Great.
It's our first face-to-face meeting, although I don't know that we've ever had a phone conversation that was under an hour in length.
Well, that's true. We have a lot to talk about.
We do. And you're so helpful and you've given me so much insight. I invited you here so we can talk about everything that you know that we can talk about in 20 minutes to a half hour. And I definitely want to talk about your book, The New Sales Conversation, which is out. And I got the uncorrected manuscript. I read it a long time ago and it's really, really powerful stuff. And I hope we can ask you some questions. And what we'll do is maybe tie this to consultative selling more generally. And okay. Go back to the beginning of your work and sort of maybe have you walk us down the path of where we are. Does that make sense?
Great. And I appreciated your taking a look at the early version. And actually, the name has changed. It's Changing the Sales Conversation.
Right.
But I appreciated the feedback that you gave me. So thank you early on.
It's a great book. And I know insight selling right now it's the buzzword. Everybody that's selling, it's got the hot hand when it comes to training. And you've been in that space and done this for a long time. Let's start by, I'd like to hear your take on the fundamental question. What is insight to begin with? What is that we're talking about? And I see so many salespeople, I've been writing about business acumen and situational knowledge for a long time, but now it's insight. What does that mean to salespeople?
Let's just talk about what is insight. Just as the word expresses, it's the sight within, and it's that deeper meaning. It's the spark. It's the connection of two points where you know one thing, and then something else is there, and all of a sudden there's this spark, and the lights go on. And a marketing manager had a great definition. Why is insight like a refrigerator? Because when you open the door, the light goes on, and that's what it is. And, you know, you hear so much about insight selling. I don't think insight is the new selling. I think insight is a major part of the new selling, big, big piece of it. And it's critical. And when you talk about situational knowledge, that's about as close as you can get to insight. Where does it come from? It comes from research. It comes from experience, that situational knowledge, thought leadership, and intuition, gut, because there's a mystery about it. We really don't know how that spark happens. But certainly in a business context, the more knowledge you have, the more experience, the research that you can bring to clients and take their situation and bring a new piece of information. And all of a sudden, they have an idea, something that can solve a business problem, that help them look at a business problem in a different way.
Let me ask about this, because here's the challenge. And I've been throwing this challenge out to salespeople and sales managers on the blog for 4.5 years. You can't, in my mind, you can't install insight into a human being. I mean, you can share the slide deck with them and you can educate them. But that insight, and when you say internal, it is inside. It's the intuition part of it counts for a lot. It's the Germans call it Fingerspitzengefühl. I'm not German, so I can say that with great difficulty. But it's this fingertip feel. You know something without knowing exactly how you know it. You can intuit it. You can feel it. And it's tough, in my mind, to develop that. How do salespeople get that? And give me your feedback, I guess, on that line of thinking.
That's the magic piece. Fortunately, there's more to it than that. Thank goodness there is the research and the experience. And as you call it beautifully, the situational knowledge. Those things really are the things that salespeople that don't have that magic touch. And that's really what you're talking about, that magic finger touch, that magic touch of an idea. The more knowledge they have, the more experience, they can look at a situation and then bring something to it so they can then look at it in a new dimension, in a new way. So I think that's the key. One company was their advertisement did not work, and they spent a lot of money on it, and it was, you know, in all of the newspapers. And they went with a consultant, and the consultant was telling me that he pointed out to them that they were saying it's new, and people were afraid of what's new. And instead of saying buy this new thing, the new ad became, look at what you're missing. And then people didn't want that. So once they got that research, they got that insight, they changed the ad, they looked at it differently, and all of a sudden sales just skyrocketed. And the consultant shared that story. So fortunately, knowledge and experience and research are also a part of it. But people that have the gift of just that intuiting certainly are ahead of the game. And sales, it's very hard for salespeople. They need a lot more knowledge. They need a lot more skill. And to ask them to do it themselves is I don't think possible. I think marketing has to step up to the plate and really provide that in research and information and industry knowledge and share experiences in the organization so salespeople can have access to success stories.
I would take it even further than that. I think that sales leadership has to help make sure that especially the young and new salespeople that are coming in have an opportunity to get the experiences, because you don't get situational knowledge until you have situations. And if you're not engaged, but I see them sort of thrown to the wolves, well, here's the slide deck, marketing's giving you the insights, go. And honestly, I see more and more, and I wrote about this last week, these kids are working from home, and they're not rubbing up against each other and having the experiences and riding along with people like used to happen. And I think it's harder for them to get that situational knowledge, but I've challenged sales leaders that I work with to think about, how do you give them a set of experiences that they get to bump up against things and see the impact that things have, so that they can actually get those experiences. And you sort of said the same thing. It's tough to get.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And that's where coaching comes in. The line manager now really has to step up to the plate, especially when people are working remotely. They don't have one another. They don't have the overhearing what happens in the call next to them. And it is much harder. And then they are facing clients that are very, very sophisticated and smart and have done a lot of homework. So I think the coaching piece, do you see that as practically the answer? I mean, it really is the response to this problem is the managers have to coach and go out with their people.
Absolutely. Spend more time coaching, less time serving the organization, you know, which a first-line manager spends so much time just serving the organization instead of serving the rep. And the rep is ultimately what's going to make the numbers go up in the first place. Let's talk about the premise of your book and changing the conversation. And you've been at this a long time. You built a big company and you started talking about consultative selling decades ago. What is the change that needs to occur? And if you can maybe even walk us down that path from where we were in consultative to what's changed and why we need this now.
You know, it's not a matter of abandoning consultative selling. It is as relevant as it has ever been. You need to understand the client's needs. But the big difference is the client's needs have changed. And in the past, a good salesperson, could do homework and do a lot of probing and bring a good product solution. And that was the differentiator. That's no longer the case. Technology, the internet, has completely disrupted selling. Buyers are buying differently, and now salespeople have to sell differently. So I really see changing the sales conversation as an extension of consultative selling. Yes, that's the basics, and some of that has to change. Many of the methodologies that were tried and true for years now are obsolete. For instance, the need dialogue is no longer the conversation starter. Clients don't want to sit there and go through. They have questioning fatigue, but they still need to be questioned. So how do you deal with that dilemma? So in the new sales conversation, that's where we started our conversation. That's where insights come in. If you can bring insights to show them, I know your world. I understand. I can create value with you. And then place that insight. The big mistake is to think insight selling is the insight is the selling. Insight is the start. Then you have to move into the need dialogue. So, and to me, the new selling is really a teaching mode. And to me, the best teachers, the great teachers, are it's interactive. It's not a lecture. It's not didactic. So we have to learn how to use insights in a way to kick off a deep business-oriented dialogue with questions.
I read your book months ago, but there's a section in there, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I think I have a good memory here on this. It's teaching and learning too, though, right?
Yes, absolutely. That's where the question.
Yeah, and that's the part that I think a lot of people, when we're talking about the new world that we live in, it's go out and teach. It's go out and teach. Okay, cool. But learn too. And you use this insight to develop some latent dissatisfaction to get their mind around a new problem. But then you still have to do a lot of other things before you really know how to help a client. I see so many people that want to now come back in and pitch and say, look, this is the right answer. We know it is. We've done it for other people. But you don't know that company well enough to know how does that work inside their organization and what does it really need to look like to make it work for them. And I see them blowing it with different stakeholders throughout the process because they're not really accounting for needs.
Oh, you're absolutely right. The insight, I think every positioning of insight needs to end with, you know, what's your perception of that? What's been your experience with that? Then you've got to find out where the client's coming from because you really don't know if the client already has rejected that idea. Maybe someone was in 2 days ago when they've rejected it. You don't know what the political situation, what the operational problems are. You don't know how the client feels about that. You don't know the politics. So there really needs to be a dialogue, but you earn the right with that for that dialogue because you've given, because you've actually put some information on the table. As you said, it's I call it heat mapping in the book. You're raising the heat on an issue. You're raising the visibility of an issue and the client saying, that's interesting because it's relevant to something that you think you can improve down the road.
You beat me to my question about heat mapping because I love that. It's this idea. It's sitting there. It's on simmer and you're coming behind and you're really putting a lot of focus on this point where improvement is possible.
And that's what the insight does. And that's where the value of the insight comes in. And the great teaching, in my view, is interactive. It is not you go in and you have the answer. And in fact, all the research shows, if you really look at social research, it tells us that reason alone does not change a person's mind. It simply doesn't. Because if it did, we could all convince each other of things that we can't. So we need the trust, we need the relationship, and we need to understand that client as an individual. You know, a lot of the research that we're getting is from marketing, and that's one to all. That's broad. It's not. Sorry about that.
No problems.
Can you get that out?
No, we're gonna leave it in. It's fine. Mine might ring while we're talking, or I could have dogs bark any minute now.
Okay. I apologize. I had it off all morning, and then I turned it on for one reason. Oh, it's off. It's off. And sorry about that. Okay.
we're very human here.
Thank you. Well, that's right. And that's what when I talk about linking as one of the parts in the book, it's about being human-centered, not just client-centered. So thank you.
No problem. Yeah. And you don't teach anymore at Wharton, right?
Actually, I did not teach this year for personal reasons, but
you've been a teacher and I've been a teacher both in different ways, and I still teach at Capital. And we know adults learn when there's a dialogue and a conversation and there's a prompt and there's a reason to start answering a question and exploring. And that's what makes a great teacher in my mind. And I have students all the time say, you're a great teacher. And it's mostly because I don't do any teaching. You know, mostly it's because I point in a direction and facilitate it. And they do all the work, but listening to themselves talk to each other makes me really popular. And I think that same thing's true with clients. If you give them space and you help them find the way, you don't have to be coming in and pitching your idea. You can show it, you can teach it, and you can step out and let some of the work develop.
There's a lot more teaching sometimes with questions than with telling or declarative sentences. There's a lot of teaching, and that's what you're saying I think you're doing. You ask the right question, you get the minds thinking, exploring, and you can keep guiding with those questions.
What, in your mind, what skills now are less valuable for a salesperson, and what skills are more valuable? What sort of dropped off that used to be, look, this was what salespeople needed to be, and now, if anything comes to mind there?
Well, you know, I think in the past, the product was the differentiator, and now the salesperson is the differentiator. So I don't think anything has dropped off. I think the challenge is more has been added on, as a matter of fact, because the key skills of listening and questioning, positioning, relating and so forth, those skills are still there. But now, of course, they need technology skills. They have to be really good with technology, really good with comfortable with technology so they can leverage all of the great tools that are out there. I think they also have to know how to brand themselves because they're the differentiator now. And, you know, the power of a brand is one thing. When you think about that, when a client thinks about that salesperson, there's one image they get first. What does the salesperson want that to be? And how do they establish that trusting relationship within that image? I mean, are you the go-to person? Are you the technical expert? Are you the one that can connect you with somebody? Are you the industry expert? You know, what's that one thing that you want your client, because their client's going to identify that one thing they'll think of when they think of you. You should try to control that. So I think they need to have a presence on LinkedIn. They have to know how to use the social skills and so forth.
What's funny about that is with all the talking about young people and social media, I go out and look at their LinkedIn profiles and they're empty. I mean, they're bare. And I'm thinking, you're supposed to be leading us
right
down this path. But and you're right. I had a client that I won in one of my businesses. And the reason he agreed to meet with me is because he was able to look at my LinkedIn profile and decide I was somebody worth talking to. And they get to look both directions. And we think we're the ones doing the research, but they can very easily Google you too and decide whether or not you're worth spending time with.
And they are doing that. You're not just looking them up. Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of the profiles look like they're applying for a job because in the past, that's what you had. Now it really has to be something around your value, what you bring to a client. You know, Claire Booth Luce once said the most important sentence is, you know, what is your sentence? That we all have one sentence. And if you really think about that, they need to really take a look at it and say, if a client read this, would the client know the value I could bring to them tomorrow?
That's right. I don't see that when you look at a LinkedIn profile that looks like a resume. It looks like you're applying for a sales job, and you're not. You're applying to be the consultative salesperson or the trusted advisor for the client. One thing that I think has shifted, and you speak to this in the book in a couple different places, is risk aversion. I think risk is a bigger issue now than it's ever been. And I think that resolving risk is more challenging for salespeople than it's ever been. There's a greater tendency for clients to just stick with the status quo than to take any risk. And I see a lot of deals die because the client really, I've said this is that they trust their problem more than they trust you as the salesperson. They know the problem. They know what that looks like. They have no idea what kind of pain you're going to bring them as you walk them through the change initiative. Talk about how that's changed in your view.
I think that's a very important change, and clients are risk averse, and we're seeing it in things such as they have consensus buying. And I think there are a few things that are very important for salespeople. The solution now has to be different. The solution can't be, you know, this is because my product is superior. Yes, that's a part of it. But that can't be the lead. I think the lead has to be, we understand the business challenge. We know how important it is. And this is the outcome we can produce with you. And then I'm going to give you some proof of value. I will actually show you an example. A salesperson has to go in with success stories. They have to go in with the metrics to show them, this is what it's costing you now. You know, this is what it'll cost you if you do nothing. This is what we're bringing to the table and what it means. But even that is not enough. Even when you have that total rational story, then comes trust. Then they have to actually trust you. You have to have proven yourself or built that trust with the client, because otherwise deals are getting pushed and pushed to quarter to quarter. No decisions are increasing. So I think the when I talk about value tracking in the book, what I'm talking about is articulating your solution in terms of the business challenge, the outcome, proof of value, and the fact that that person knows that you'll be shoulder to shoulder and you will be there for them and you will deliver. And that's trust.
There's two things I want to say about that. You started off with the idea, I don't have the exact words, but I'll get to listen to this again. And it starts with the idea of, you said you understand and you feel their business challenge, which is sort of an empathy thing. It's like really understanding it, not just intellectually understanding it, but understanding that that's where the value is being created, is being shoulder to shoulder and being somebody who's going to be in the foxhole with them when the bullets start flying, which is what they really expect from a salesperson now. The second thing that you said I want to chat about for just a couple minutes, I see salespeople petrified, and the organizations generally, of ROI. They're petrified of calculating the ROI, and they go, well, what if I'm wrong, and what if it's not this number, and what if they have a different metric? And I have never had an experience where, personally, where I said, you know what, I think it looks like it's about this. Give me your feedback. What do you think? And the client goes, well, we think it's more than that. Okay, good. Then is it safe for us to go with your number here? And I go, yeah, let's use my number. And they're trying to make a business case inside, but I see they're petrified to engage in that, thinking, what if I'm wrong? Well, if you're wrong, they're going to correct you. I mean, if you say, but we think this is a 12-month ROI, and they go, actually, looking at your numbers, we think it's more like 16. Does that work for you? Should we be looking at this a different way? I mean, you're at least engaged in the conversation. What's your thought there as you talk about risk and this idea of mapping the value and proving your case?
To the extent that they can do it, they must do it, because otherwise you're going to have the deal pushed quarter to quarter. As you said, clients are more happy with the problem. I like the way you phrase that. The key is to make sure that it's reasonable, make sure that you get the client's buy-in and get the client's feedback on it. And then the other beauty of that is at the end of this, you can go back and say, did we do it? Because, you know, there's that extra stage of the sale that everybody forgets about it in the sales process, which is post-sale. And that if you want to stay with that client, suppose you didn't make that number, you better go back and talk about it. And if you did, leverage it. Get a testimonial, get a story, get a next piece of business. So it's critical, and it helps the whole sales process.
Let me take the couple minutes we have left and pitch the book for a second. And I don't have the book, the physical book, because I got the early review. Let me just ask the question. Inside your book, and this comes from who you are as a person. You're a person that's developed solutions. You've built frameworks for big companies. But did the book come with the sales tool and the sales call planner in the back of it, the version that I have, where you've got the call strategy, you've got the preparation pieces and all that?
Yes, all the tools are in there in the back.
You so got to buy the book just for that. Just for that piece alone, if you just actually work through that, you're going to go, this is way worth my time and effort. It's got a loss review, if I remember right. There's checklists. It's really, really, it's a powerful addition to the book. It will help you work through the material. It's a brilliant book. It's a welcome addition to what I believe salespeople need right now. And I appreciate you coming on to share your thoughts with us.
I appreciate the interview so much. And it's so nice to see you.
You too. Thanks, Linda.
Thanks.
Now you know why I love Linda. You can find Linda Richardson at richardson.com, and you can find more about Richardson training there. In the show notes, you'll find a link to the Amazon page for Changing the Sales Conversation, Connect, Collaborate, and Close. I'm Anthony Iannarino. You can find me at thesalesblog.com. When you show up, do sign up for the newsletter, and I'll see you back here next week in the arena.